Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. For this Monday, the 17th of May, last week we had one of those interviews that stay with you. Charles Bowden was our guest, author of Murder City, Ciudad Juarez, and the Global Economy's New Killing Fields. He spent some 15 years reporting on what's going on in Juarez, which he calls the murder capital of the United States. And during our conversation, he talked about NAFTA. NAFTA passed Congress in 1993. And you'll recall, if you're old enough to remember, the conversation at that time that it was going to reduce poverty in Mexico, that it was going to really help the American economy as well. The president at that time, Bill Clinton, said, pass NAFTA and we will have jobs for Mexican in Mexico, defeat NAFTA, and there will be a tremendous flow of Mexicans to the United States. And our guest essentially said that NAFTA has accomplished quite the opposite, that as a result of NAFTA, heavily subsidized U.S. corn and other agribusiness products have competed with small Mexican farms, and that it's driven a number of small farmers and their families off the land. Those who are working in U.S. companies in Juarez are making very little money, and they're crossing the border. He believes that the immigration problem is primarily caused by people crossing the border to find some kind of work. So we thought we ought to look at NAFTA because not too many people have been looking at what role it's playing in the immigration problem and if indeed it has been beneficial. As others will say, it's been very beneficial for people who live in Mexico and for American companies and for U.S. workers. So what's the truth here? That's what we're going to talk about this hour. And we'll be welcoming your phone calls. We'll have two very different viewpoints on this issue. Thea Lee is Policy Director and Chief International Economist for the AFL-CIO. Later, we'll be speaking with the Senior Fellow in the Peterson Institute for International Affairs and co-author of NAFTA Revisited, Achievements and Challenges. Here's our phone number. I would imagine we'll have quite a few calls because the issue of immigration, which I know you're always keen to talk about, is very much front and center in this discussion. 800-486-8655. And the email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Thea, welcome. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. So has NAFTA been good for Mexican workers?
NAFTA has not been particularly good for Mexican workers or American workers or Canadian workers. The big beneficiaries have been the multinational corporations and the elite in all three countries who do have more mobility, more flexibility, more freedom from national regulation that they don't like. But working people in all three countries, I would say, have seen their situation exacerbated. It's not so much that NAFTA is yes or no, good or bad, black or white. It's more that it accelerated and exacerbated a situation that was already on a bad track.
And so it's been good for corporations. Can you tell me, our guest last week indicated that so many small farmers went out of business all over Mexico and that the people who were working in those U.S. corporations were making, I think he said, $75 a week tops, and they couldn't afford to live on that. So they're crossing the border to supplement their income or they're getting involved in the drug trade, that it's just been miserable. And small businesses have suffered because of the places like Walmart that are coming in there. It sounded tragic to me.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think the situation for agriculture in Mexico was the most extreme, that you had a lot of small subsistence farmers in Mexico that weren't particularly efficient. And one of the problems is that economists always think, well, if we want to make people more efficient, let's just take away their livelihood and then they'll transition into something that is a more valuable use of their time. But Mexico doesn't have particularly good transition programs. They don't have unemployment insurance. They didn't have any kind of retraining program for farmers to help them become more efficient or to get a different kind of job. And so, as you say, what ended up happening was that several million people were no longer able to make a living off the land as they had done for many generations in Mexico. And those people either ended up, you know, on the outskirts of the city in the informal sector, coming to the United States illegally and looking for jobs there, or unemployed somewhere or underemployed. And so you didn't have the smooth transition because economies don't work that way. Just shutting off one way of making a living, which is the inefficient rural sector, doesn't guarantee that those individuals have the wherewithal and the tools and the leverage that they need. And, of course, the Mexican government wasn't prepared to smooth those transitions either. And so what you did see was a real human tragedy and increased inequality, increased displacement, and, of course, increased illegal immigration to the United States because people were desperately looking for livelihood.
Did it also increase substantially to the drug trade, drug trafficking in Mexico and subsequent trafficking in that part of the United States?
Well, I think if people aren't able to make a living the way they were, whether it's in small business or agriculture, they do turn to illegal activities. And so certainly we have seen an upswing in the drug activity and the violence and the crime that goes along with that, which is especially tragic.
Mm-hmm. And how have multinational corporations benefited, would you say, Thea?
Well, for the big multinational corporations that have production in both countries, this is NAFTA was a huge boon because it just helped them rationalize their production. They could move production more easily and be guaranteed, for example, if you're moving a factory from Wisconsin to Mexico before NAFTA, you weren't really guaranteed that the tariffs were going to stay low or that the Mexican government wouldn't be regulating you in ways that you didn't like or even that your intellectual property in Mexico would be protected. NAFTA took care of a lot of those concerns and those obstacles and those problems that multinational corporations might have had, and that was really, in our view, the point of NAFTA, was to make it easier for companies to move production across borders and earn higher profits because they're paying lower wages, they have less stringent environmental regulations in Mexico, and yet they're still selling the products, for the most part, to American consumers. So this was a very beneficial arrangement for multinational corporations, and they fought hard for those provisions in NAFTA. They fought hard also to keep the labor and environmental protections weak, which was what we did see. That was a big part of the debate around NAFTA, if you recall back in the early 1990s,
right,
that labor and environmental movements in all three countries were trying to strengthen the labor and environmental provisions. And we ended up with pretty weak side agreements, and those side agreements haven't proven to be particularly valuable.
Considering the fact that we're dealing, and we're about to deal, I think, with immigration reform in a huge way in this country, that all the Arizona bill, the problems that we seem to be having with immigration are tied in directly, and it would be hard to deny this, with NAFTA, why aren't we looking at the effect that this trade agreement has had on all of these other issues, on drugs, on immigration, on poverty?
Well, that's an excellent question, Kathleen, and it's one I wish we were discussing more. And even, you know, even today, it's not really too late. NAFTA's in place, but it's not too late for us, the United States and Mexico and Canada, to take another look at this relationship and to try to make it work better. We're going to be each other's neighbors for a long, long time, forever, we hope. And we should be able to figure out how we can build a stronger relationship where we're creating good jobs on both sides of the border. But, and it I think it's particularly irksome that this link between immigration and trade policy and globalization and the wrong kinds of globalization isn't more in the focus. And people in the United States are worried about immigration. You know, do we have the right set of policies in place? Are we doing the right things? But we need to connect it all to the kind of trade policies, the kind of trade agreements that we're negotiating with our partners, and figure out how can we negotiate a different kind of trade agreement that is more protective of workers and the environment, that is more protective of the right kinds of development, democratic, sustainable, and equitable development, so that we aren't exacerbating the pressures for people to leave their homes in order to find a decent job. People ought to be able to find a good job where they live. They shouldn't have to cross borders to find a good job.
And do you think they'll be forced to look at that treaty once the situation in this country becomes worse?
I do. I think that our fates are tied up with each other, and we're not going to be able to avoid that. And so we should look back, and we should figure out what is it about our trade relationship or cross-border investment relationship and our immigration relationship that is connected and that we could do differently and do better in the future, whether it's with trade agreements that we're going to negotiate in future days or whether it is with this existing relationship.
You have talked about fixing NAFTA. What aspects of NAFTA need to be fixed, Thea?
Well, we would love to see a revisiting of the labor and environment side agreements. As I said before, those are very weak. They're not binding. They were added on as a last-minute afterthought. And right now, the labor side agreement, which, of course, I'm very familiar with, is one where, you know, it takes sometimes years and years to adjudicate a case. At the end of the day, there are no teeth in the agreement. There are no economic sanctions that matter. And what that means is that neither the governments nor the companies take seriously the labor side agreement. So if we were to say that the countries, Canada, Mexico, and the United States, were going to recommit themselves to the principles of core worker rights that the International Labor Organization has reached consensus on, that every worker in these three countries deserves the right to freedom of association, the right to bargain collectively, and they deserve to be free of child labor, forced labor, and discrimination in employment, then I think these three governments could actually make some headway, that they could either renegotiate and strengthen the side agreements, or they could even agree that they want to enforce those side agreements in a meaningful way, which none of the three countries has done up until now.
Mm-hmm. Don't you think it's ironic? I quoted this Bill Clinton comment, it was at the NAFTA signing, so that was 16 years ago. When he said, pass NAFTA and we will have jobs for Mexicans in Mexico, defeat NAFTA and there will be a tremendous flow of Mexicans to the United States.
Well, ironic would be one nice word for that. Wrong is another word. I think President Salinas said something similar, that we could either pass NAFTA and import tomatoes, or we would, if we didn't pass NAFTA, we would be importing tomato pickers. And, you know, in fact, we passed NAFTA, and a lot of terrible things happened. The peso crashed. There was a big influx. And I think the estimates that I've seen are that illegal immigration flows have about tripled since NAFTA went into effect. So clearly that wasn't the solution. And we shouldn't be fooling ourselves that so-called free trade or these trade agreements are going to stop immigration from happening. I mean, the story is supposed to be, if you do a trade agreement, everybody gets rich. And we all know that rich countries don't have labor and environment problems. And, of course, why would workers want to leave a wealthy country? But what we haven't paid enough attention to is, how is that wealth distributed? There's no question that NAFTA made some people wealthy. But if you're making the corporate elite wealthy, but you're impoverishing average workers, that obviously is not going to do anything to slow down illegal immigration flows. In fact, it might speed them up, as we saw.
And Thea, where does the Mexican government stand on this? Would they like to fix NAFTA?
I don't think there's much interest on the part of the current Mexican government in fixing NAFTA. I know I think a lot of people in Mexico would love to see NAFTA fixed. Now, certainly we work with a lot of unions and environmental groups and other kinds of human rights organizations, and they would all love to revisit NAFTA. So we could get a lot of consensus at a people's summit, but I think it's hard with the current leadership in Mexico and Canada, that there doesn't seem to be much interest. I think there's some fear that if we were to reopen NAFTA, we don't really know what direction it would go in.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls. Thea Lee is our guest, the first half hour policy director and chief international economist for the AFL-CIO. We're talking about fixing NAFTA. We're talking about the problems, and both our guests would agree that there are problems with NAFTA. This came to our attention, of course, as we look at the immigration debate in this country and also the comments that were made by Charles Bowden last week, which weighed on our minds, the author of Murder City. He had been investigating what's going on in Juarez for the last 15 years, which sounds like hell on earth, and discussed the fact that NAFTA wasn't working in that part of Mexico, in lots of parts of Mexico, and as a result, people were forced to either into the drug trade to supplement their income or forced to come to the United States to find work to feed their families. So we're trying to figure out what indeed is going on. To your calls momentarily, some lines are open. I'm sure many of you would like to join this conversation. 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@WPR.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go to phone calls, starting with Joanne from Milwaukee. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. I was thinking, listening to your guest, that what she's saying about the effect of NAFTA sounds to me just like a continuation of what U.S. policy has been toward Latin America throughout its formation, in terms of U.S. companies just treating it like it's a big resource for them to plunder for their, you know, for most profit, with enforcing people off their land and just treating them disposably, you know, like I'm talking about fruit companies, coffee companies, mining companies. And, you know, I was thinking last night, actually, just that sounds to me like the underlying cause of our immigration problems. And and then I was thinking that why doesn't the U.S. government enforce crack down more on U.S. employers who employ illegal immigrants. I mean, I keep hearing over and over that would be an effective way, and yet, to address the problem, and yet it's not done that much. And I was wondering if the reason is that the government doesn't want to antagonize business, like, again, just putting business interests over good policy. And I just wonder what you think about
that. Okay, see ya.
I agree with the caller's basic point that there is a certain continuity in U.S. policy toward Latin America, where our companies and have taken advantage of those countries, both for cheaper labor or more vulnerable labor, as well as for resources. But I think the immigration question is an interesting one as well. And we have the way we try to frame the immigration question is that we're trying to focus on working people and what their needs are and what their rights are. And so we've talked a lot about the need to protect workers' rights wherever they are and whatever their status is. And so workers in this country who come here illegally are taken advantage of by unscrupulous employers, just as the caller said. And the employers make money off of doing that. They make money off of not asking the question, do you have documentation or do you not have documentation? But it's sort of a complicated dance that goes on, that the employers, as soon as the workers stand up and say, but we need to be paid overtime and we want to have a union and we want to have safety equipment or a bathroom break or whatever it is, then the employer wakes up and notices that the employee might or might not have the proper documentation, and they call the INS and they send them back across the border. And so the situation today is really bad for working people, whether they're native born or immigrants, because the employers, as you said, have all the cards that they can use the immigration laws to bust a union, and they can use the immigration laws to make money when nobody's paying attention. And so what we really need to do is bring people out of the shadows and figure out how we can enforce our laws and enforce workers' rights, and then also have a system over the medium and the long term which is rational and which is responsive to both human needs as well as real economic concerns.
I have read, which seems incomprehensible to me, that U.S. companies who are operating along the border in Mexico do not pay taxes.
In the maquiladoras?
Yes.
I think that's right. They pay very little taxes, and it's one of the problems. The Mexican government has the right to ask them to pay taxes, but they're trying to attract business. They're trying to attract investment and create jobs and so on. But if they don't ask those companies to pay taxes, it's very hard, as you can imagine, for the government to provide things like basic infrastructure, whether it's sewage or schools or decent roads and so on. And so you have a situation where these companies are kind of perched on the border there. They're not really invested in Mexico. They're not invested in their communities. And the government allows them to get away with it. So, again, you have sort of a collaboration, if you will, between the companies and the government of Mexico that hasn't asked them to pay their fair share so that they can fund the infrastructure and the development and that's needed to support those communities.
Mm-hmm. When NAFTA was passed, Theo, was there any kind of stipulation that we're going to look at this treaty again in I don't know, 16 years or 17 years or 5 years for that matter?
Not really. There is an exit clause in NAFTA that any country can exit NAFTA with 6 months' notice. But we haven't seen a whole lot of interest amongst our politicians in applying that clause. At any one moment, the three governments could come together and decide they wanted to renegotiate it, they wanted to reopen it. But you'd have to have agreement between the three governments at the same time to renegotiate in the same direction. And so it is a pretty heavy lift, and it's hard. And I think it's something that we've said for future trade policies, there ought to be some built-in review mechanism so that the Congress and ordinary citizens can come through and say, hey, this part of it's really not working out. Can we have an automatic opportunity to renegotiate that is open at some specified interval, maybe every 5 or 10 years?
Well, tell me if this is going too far, but as you talk about this, it sounds like the only thing that's working is that some people in these multinational corporations are making quite a bit of money.
That's right. It's working fine, depending who you are and where you are. And so, you know, there has been more trade across the borders, and it's I think, a little bit comical sometimes. I've been on panels with a lot of people from the different countries, some of the corporate folks, some of the government folks. And from their point of view, NAFTA has been a wonderful success. They never talk to anybody who doesn't think NAFTA has been fabulously successful. And if your benchmark is, you know, did trade go up, did investment go up, are companies making money, then you can tick that box that NAFTA has been a success. But if you step back a little bit, you say, well, what are real wages for the average worker? What does the environment look like? Are community services being provided? Then I think you have to give a different answer.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another phone call. Rich from Appleton. Hi, Rich.
Well, good morning. How are you folks today?
All right. How are you?
Good. I'm just calling. It sounds kind of out there, I guess. But what I'm wondering is it would help, because it seems like with the onset of the Obama administration that a lot of grassroots things are kind of churning out there. And if we took a picture of these owners and a history of what they're doing, where they've moved to, what impact they might have had on different areas, and just put it out over the Internet for people to read, do you think that could stir up a grassroots thing to maybe somebody buying product B instead of product C, and force the issue?
I think it's a great idea. I mean, I think it's great for people to have more information than they have. And the Internet is a terrific and very inexpensive medium for doing that. And whether it's pictures of the owners or the factories or interviews with the workers, I think it would be tremendously helpful. And it's good for us all to step back and take a look and say, how could this relationship be working better? Nobody wants to stop trading between the United States and Mexico and Canada, but we want to make sure that the rules are protecting working people and protecting the environment and not just corporate profits.
And Thea, what do you imagine would happen if we exited NAFTA?
Well, the immediate piece would be that the tariffs would snap back up to the pre-NAFTA rates. And so there would be a certain amount of disruption, and that's certainly what you hear from the business folks and so on. Part of the problem is that you aren't going to fix a lot of things in the short run by exiting NAFTA, because the kinds of things that we need to fix are things that, as I said at the outset, we already have. And we had before NAFTA, we had a lot of problems. It wasn't like workers were living in paradise before NAFTA, and then the day after NAFTA passed, all of a sudden it was terrible. We have a lot of challenges living in a global economy, and Mexico and Canada are two of our important trading partners, but not our only trading partners. We have problematic trade relationships with China and with other countries as well. So in some ways, you know, NAFTA is one piece of it. It's an important piece because of the proximity and the importance of these countries, both in terms of immigration flows, in terms of trade flows, and so on. What I'd really like to see us do is to have some conversations that included not just the governments and not just the business people, but the unions and the environmental groups and some of the NGOs from all three countries come together and be really proactive about what it is that is working well in our relationship. And I think the immigration, the cross-border flows, is not working well. And whatever we're doing in terms of the drug war, I also don't think is working particularly well.
Mm-hmm.
President Calderon will be here in Washington on Wednesday, I believe. And we're hoping that that our government can raise with him some of these issues about the struggles that the workers and the unions in Mexico are having right now in the mining sector and in the electrical power and light, where there have been a layoff of, I think, 40,000 Mexican workers. And so we're very concerned, and we're working with our brothers and sisters in Mexico to try to bring more attention to those issues and make sure that those issues get raised when President Calderon is here in Washington.
Thank you, Thea, so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Kathleen. It was a pleasure.
Pleasure to have you here. Thea Lee, Policy Director and Chief International Economist for the AFL-CIO. Jeffrey Schott is joining us now, Senior Fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics and co-author of NAFTA Revisited, Achievements and Challenges. We'll welcome phone calls for him as well. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Thank you very much, Jeffrey, for joining us. Hi.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Your overall assessment, who is NAFTA working? Who's reaping the benefits of NAFTA?
NAFTA is doing what it was designed to do, and that is to remove restrictions to trade and investment and to improve the ability of the three partner countries to manage their economic relationship. It wasn't designed to be the total fix for all the problems in each of our societies. And there's a lot of other things that need to be done to complement the provisions of the trade agreement and to ensure that each country can take full advantage of it and that all the people in our societies can take the best advantage of this increased integration of our three economies.
Mm. Let me give you a fairly simple explanation of why we did this show today, and I need to ask you about this. We were talking, and I'm sure you're aware of his book, with the author of Murder City, Charles Bowden, last week, who spent a lot of time in Juarez, Mexico, which sounds like hell to me. And he was doing reporting on the incredible number of murders and the gangs and the drugs, etc. He blamed NAFTA for a lot of the immigration problems and the drug problems and all kinds of problems in Mexico, because he said that the net effect has been that multinationals have come into the area. They're paying really bad wages for people. They've closed down small farms, medium-sized farms, small businesses, so that nobody can make a living, and that a lot of what you see in terms of people crossing the border is to find jobs, and they may be bringing drugs because they've gone to drugs as a way to supplement their income, and that if we looked at NAFTA and changed that, that's a huge problem with NAFTA. What do you say to that?
Well, the first thing is that a trade agreement isn't going to solve problems that are deeply embedded in society. I think Thea mentioned this towards the end of her comments. What has been lacking is the funding to upgrade police, deal with some of the problems of infrastructure that has contributed to a loss of production in these areas. These types of things require resources that only come when a country grows and has an adequate tax system, has an adequate social safety net that can take care of these problems. Many of the problems are also not just Mexican problems. And the drug running, the crimes, the guns available to these drug lords. Also, we bear some responsibility for that, and we haven't been fully helpful to our neighbor in dealing with these problems.
Mm-hmm. But would you say on the whole that the implementation of this treaty has been helpful to workers in Mexico?
On the whole, yes, because it means that Mexico has a more stable economy and has been better positioned to deal with the broad international competition, particularly from China and other countries in East Asia, that Thea was alluding to. But the on the downside, you can say that the average worker in Mexico is not going to really be better off until these reforms are well-grounded, are better distributed. And that requires changes in the way the Mexican structures its own domestic economic policy. That is not affected by NAFTA and has been prohibited by the rather tight fiscal and monetary policies that the Mexican governments have had to pursue since the peso crisis, and perhaps overly stringent during this period that had in a way that they haven't provided enough for social programs that would have benefited the workers.
Mm-hmm. And so tell me more explicitly what it is they need to do. What kinds of policies?
Well, at the macro level, they have to reform tax policy. Mexico derives a lower amount of revenues from its tax policies than most other OECD countries. And that means that all of their social programs are underfunded. That means they don't have the money for the big infrastructure investments that would provide new opportunities for investment and job creation in outlying regions in Mexico beyond Mexico City. It means they don't fund the social safety net the way they should. And this is tied up part and parcel with the way that the government has been organized, and the difficulty in passing some of these tax reforms is due to, in part, the nascent democracy Mexico has been building over the past decade. Very hard when you have a one-party rule for 70 years to say we're going to get something done and then suddenly go to a Congress that has 100 different viewpoints and nobody knows how to work together a consensus. And that's what Mexico has been struggling with and why they haven't been very fast on getting reforms on tax and energy policies.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit like thinking, look at Washington, and if we can't get something done after more than 200 years, imagine how the Mexicans are trying to build consensus in their politics after only 10 or 15 years.
We're going to take some phone calls for you, and we start with Carmen from Oak Creek. Hi, Carmen.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and mm-hmm. I'm glad you're talking about this because I feel in some way La Raza, the Voices of the Frontera, and these organizations that are out there protesting our immigration laws should really be aiming some of this venom at the Mexican government. I am a first-generation Mexican-American born in this country. My father came here legally, learned to read and write and speak the language, and worked very hard. And I've also had the very privilege of going to Mexico many times and living amongst my family members. And I have seen through the years how they suffer with their economy that has gone down, and they have gone from middle class into low class. This because the Mexican government is not focusing and cleaning up their act. And they are now forced to come to this country. Many of them are being taken advantage of by companies that hire so-called subcontractors or contractors that are of minority run. And they pay them less wages than what they pay the American worker at a minimum wage. So it's a lose-lose thing. And I think we must do something about E-Verify because that is the only way that we can get control of the people that are coming here. But at the same time, I wish some of these organizations would help the Mexican people establish better rules and help them with their tax system and their social services, because this is a losing proposition here. We cannot become the welfare department, the employment department, the education department for Mexico. Mexico has got to deal with this, and our government needs to make that very clear to Mr. Calderon that he needs to start cleaning up some of these things that are going on. And we have to look at this because many Americans are losing their jobs.
Jeffrey.
Well, I think Carmen mentions a lot of important problems that are decades in the making and are very difficult to resolve in both Mexico and the United States. We don't have a consensus on how to deal with immigration from Mexico, and the lack of any action out of Washington has led to the extremist policies that you've seen now adopted in Arizona. But Carmen's also right that you can't just say this is fault. A lot needs to be done to deal with the lack of focus in Mexico on the social safety net and on improving education, improving infrastructure that will attract the investment that provides the jobs that will keep families together in Mexico. Now, the key problem, one of the key problems we've seen, and it relates back to your earlier point, Kathleen, is the drug violence. And that is scaring away a lot of investment. It's hurting a lot of communities in Mexico. And this is something where the United States should be working more closely. And I think the Obama administration is trying to work with President Calderon about this to try to get a handle on this violence, both for the first and foremost for the security of the Mexican people, but also to remove the drain, the economic drain that it's causing on Mexican finances that then depletes resources available for education and other social services.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, our author who was with us last week, which is why this interview has kind of stayed with us, has said that the Mexican government is getting something like $25 billion a year from the drug trade. They have no desire whatsoever to really take care of it because they're profiting from it. And everybody, he said, when you look at Juarez, is on the take. All the police, they have a lot of police there. They have a lot of government, you know, they're all on the take. They don't investigate murders. It is as corrupt a place as you can imagine. So how do you clean that up?
Well, the problem with corruption in administration, particularly when you can't adequately fund your own government officials, law enforcement officials, of course a policeman is going to be susceptible to these massive bribes, essentially, is what the drug lords do. And the fact that the Mexican government hasn't put the money into security the way it should have long ago has just meant that this corruption has wormed its way deeper and deeper into some of these border jurisdictions. And going to take a while to expunge because it's both in the local police and to some extent in the Army.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls in just one moment. We're talking about NAFTA this hour of the program, and our guest this half hour is Jeffrey Schott, and we're welcoming phone calls for Jeffrey. The number here is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, the email address, should you care to use that, is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Jeffrey is senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics and co-author of NAFTA Revisited, Achievements and Challenges. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to your phone calls now, Rick from Pewaukee. Hi, Rick.
Hi. Thanks very much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
What I'd like to bring up is on this immigration thing is it's stuck. It's absolutely stuck. And I've got like 3 points I'd like to bring up. One, if children are born in the United States of illegal immigrants or, you know, even residents of another country, they should not get American citizenship. Should somebody be deported, this creates a hardship. Secondly, you know, look into the corporate subsidies and the import laws that are the advantages to corporations that are out. Third, totally enforce the laws that do exist or repeal them. And fourth, and most important, the current Congress should pass a law that says we're not going to do nothing. The next Congress has to. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Jeffrey?
Well, immigration is stuck. Rick's absolutely right on that. I think some of his recommendations would be a little controversial. But certainly his conclusion that the Congress is stuck and is unlikely to do very much is unfortunately right on the mark. And one Congress can't mandate what the next Congress does, but each Congress has been pushing back aside this problem and leaving it to its successors for far too long, and that's why we're getting into the mess that we're in. I think what we have to do is find ways to develop incentives for Mexicans who are attracted or economically forced to try to migrate to the United States legally or illegally to find better opportunities to stay home with their families and be able to profit and live productive and lives and have better opportunities for their children in Mexico. That was one of the reasons why NAFTA was pushed and cleared through the Congress back in 1993. But unfortunately, the follow-up policies, the domestic economic reforms that were needed to complement NAFTA were never enacted or were done so inadequately or underfunded. And that's the challenge that President Obama and President Calderon have as they meet today and as they try to work out a plan for dealing with these problems going forward.
And why weren't those put in place? What happened to them?
Well, the immediate problem was that within a year after NAFTA entered into force, Mexico had a big financial crisis, and indeed one of the biggest economic crises that they've had since just last year. GDP dropped by 7% in 1995, and that caused a big crisis. They had to really tighten their belts. They got out of it rather quickly, within 18 months, much faster than the big crisis of the 1980s, which had dragged down the Mexican economy in the mud for 6 or 7 years. This was only 18 months. But they tightened their belt pretty tight and didn't loosen up for a long time. And that meant that the economy recovered, but only due to the fact that a lot of things were cut out. And those were the important programs needed to spur the long-term investments that would guarantee more production, more employment in the economy. And so that's a big problem. There's still a big debate on how much the Mexicans should have done coming out of the tequila crisis in 1995. But I think there's a general conclusion that they didn't do nearly enough to provide for the long-term health of their economy.
Allison from Racine, hi.
Hi. I have a question and a comment. My comment is that for several years I taught English as a second language working with Mexican immigrants, and many of them admitted to me that they were here illegally just trying to make a better living for their families. And all of them, though, had Social Security numbers and therefore paid taxes. So that's a big misinformation that's out there. I don't know if you've talked about that at all, but these people do pay taxes, many of them, and basically have no rights because the Social Security number doesn't truly match their identity. But my question is, what's being done here in the United States to find employers who know that these people are here illegally and they're employing them anyways? What's being done on this side here?
Well, I'm not an expert on immigration law, but there are various provisions in the law that set regulations that set requirements for employers to do background checks. Individual states have additional policies. But the enforcement of this is rather haphazard. And so in some cases, as in Arizona, they go to extremes. In others, they do much less, indeed, the extreme on the lack of enforcement side. There needs to be some better way of providing incentives for employers to follow the rules so that they benefit the legal employees and don't create these abnormal circumstances where workers can be exploited, the problem that Thea was talking about in the first half hour.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Allison. Frank in Madison, hi.
Hi. I'd like to ask the guest, it's a superb topic, a question as to the real, truly peculiar nature of NAFTA as a trade union and agreement, because you would have expected that there were, in anticipation of the participation of all three partners, that the conditions of trade would have been normalized before the union was begun. That's what the Europeans do for the entry into the EC, that preceded the EU. So there would be the time in which the labor regulations, governance, capital flow, taxation regimens would have been normalized, a period in which that happened, and then the union would come into force. Instead, the agreement was signed and put in place, and there was no normalization period, so you get this descent to the bottom. So it was flawed initially, and that had to have been planned. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Frank.
Well, there's one problem with Frank's analysis, and that is there was never an agreement among the three countries of the type of economic union as exists in Europe. This was meant to be a just a free trade area where border measures were reduced. The model of this agreement was the U.S.-Canada free trade agreement that went into effect in 1989. The negotiations of the NAFTA are essentially about what Mexico needed to do to join the terms of the U.S.-Canada agreement. And that did not cover many of the areas that Frank was talking about with regard to tax policy, labor regulations, and the like. Now, that said, over time, there is an incentive for Mexico to upgrade its regulations because it is in competition with the United States and Canada, and particularly on the tax side. And on the labor regulation. And indeed, it did a lot on labor regulation. I don't know if Thea mentioned this, but the bigger problem on labor regulation, not what's in the books, but the enforcement of those regulations, which has been underfunded and therefore haphazard.
Mm-hmm. Here's Thea was talking about multinational corporations who have done very well in Mexico, that they are the winners. Here's an email that it goes along with that. I'd like for your response from Calvin, this is just another symptom of the underlying problem of our government being focused on protection of corporate wealth over the benefit of the people. I'm sure it's not much different in Mexico. The search for cheap labor success is paramount in the corporate mind and will continue until the American worker is cheapened to the lowest common denominator.
Well, there is a problem with this type of analysis, and that and the problem is that it ignores the fact that when you integrate across a broader region, as we're doing in North America between Canada, the United States, and Mexico, what is happening is a restructuring of the investment and rationalization of the production in different areas of the region. People in the NAFTA debate have long said, well, if you lose a plant in Peoria and gain a plant in Mexico City, that means it's a net loss for the United States. But the actually happening is that by taking less productive production plants and moving to Mexico, there are more resources to build and expand the areas where U.S. firms are doing very well and exporting not only to Mexico and Canada, but throughout the world. And so we have seen that. And for the first 10 or 15 years of NAFTA, we had a big increase in employment in the United States overall.
We have time for one more phone call. Tom from Superior. Hi.
Hello. I just want to kind of piggyback on what the email you got said, and I too agree that our corporations have too much power here, and it isn't so much a Mexican problem as it is our own problem. We're having a damaged political system, our environment's getting damaged, and now we have immigration. And you know, they're all offshoots to a deregulated corporate system. And the caller that was describing Europe was right. They have more regulations controlling, and that's where we really need to focus our attention and not blame the Mexican government and this three-country system. But
okay, we need to hold there. We have about 30 seconds. Jeffrey?
Well, you know, this is an interesting point. There has been a lot of talk about whether we should be moving towards the European model. And every time we do that, people in the United States say, but we don't want those regulations imposed on us. And so that creates difficulties as well.
Jeffrey, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate your time today. Jeffrey Schott is Senior Fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics and co-author of NAFTA Revisited, Achievements and Challenges. We also thank Thea Lee, Policy Director and Chief International Economist for the AFL-CIO, with differing viewpoints, our guests on NAFTA, the conversation prompted by the interview with Charles Bowden on Ciudad Juarez. Well, thanks, everybody, for your calls and for listening. I do want to remind you that we are on Facebook, so that if you want to know what shows are coming up, we're pretty faithful about writing what will be on tomorrow's show as soon as it's all booked and ready to go on our Facebook page, and that's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we always like to hear from you there. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Great conversations ahead. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing the hour, and to Rhonda, who also helped produce and did on-air production. Rhonda Fanning, that is. Until tomorrow.